Carol Downs went to work for W.C. Durant, the automobile manufacturer, in a minor position. He is now Mr. Durant's right-hand man and the president of one of his automobile distributing companies. He promoted himself into this profitable position solely through the aid of the law of increasing returns, which he put into operation by rendering more service and better service than that for which he was paid. In a recent visit with Mr. Downs, I asked him to tell me how he managed to gain promotion so rapidly. In a few brief sentences, he told the whole story. "When I first went to work with Mr. Durant," said he, "I noticed that he always remained at the office long after all the others had gone home for the day, and I made it my business to stay there also. No one asked me to stay, but I thought someone should be there to give Mr. Durant any assistance he might need. Often he would look around for someone to bring him a letter file or render some other trivial service, and always he found me there ready to serve him. He got into the habit of calling on me. That is all there is to the story. He got into the habit of calling on me." Listen to this sentence again, for it is full of meaning of the richest sort. "He got into the habit of calling on me." Why did Mr. Durant get into the habit of calling on Mr. Downs? Because Mr. Downs made it his business to be on hand where he would be seen. He deliberately placed himself in Mr. Durant's way in order that he might render service that would place the law of increasing returns back of him. Was he told to do this? No. Was he paid to do it? Yes. He was paid by the opportunity it offered for him to bring himself to the attention of the man who had it within his power to promote him. We are now approaching the most important part of this lesson, because this is an appropriate place at which to suggest that you have the same opportunity to make use of the law of increasing returns that Mr. Downs had, and you can go about the application of the law in exactly the same way that he did, by being on hand and ready to volunteer your services in the performance of work which others may shirk because they are not paid to do it. Stop. Don't say it. Don't even think it. If you have the slightest intention of springing that old time-worn phrase entitled, "But my employer is different." Of course he is different. All men are different in most respects, but they are very much alike in this. They are somewhat selfish. In fact, they are selfish enough not to want a man such as Carol Downs to cast his lot with their competitor, and this very selfishness may be made to serve you as an asset and not a liability if you have the good judgment to make yourself so useful that the person to whom you sell your services cannot get along without you. One of the most advantageous promotions I ever received came about through an incident which seemed so insignificant that it appeared to be unimportant. One Saturday afternoon, a lawyer, whose office was on the same floor as that of my employer, came in and asked if I knew where he could get a stenographer to do some work which he was compelled to finish that day. I told him that all of our stenographers had gone to the ball game, and that I would have been gone had he called 5 minutes later, but that I would be very glad to stay and do his work, as I could go to a ball game any day, and his work had to be done then. I did the work for him, and when he asked about how much he owed me, I replied, "Oh, about $1,000, as long as it is you. If it were anyone else, I wouldn't charge anything." He smiled and thanked me. Little did I think, when I made that remark, that he would ever pay me $1,000 for that afternoon's work. But he did. 6 months later, after I had entirely forgotten the incident, he called on me again and asked how much salary I was receiving. When I told him, he informed me that he was ready to pay me that $1,000 which I had laughingly said I would charge him for the work I had performed for him, and he did pay it by giving me a position at $1,000 a year increase in salary. Unconsciously, I had put the law of increasing returns to work in my behalf that afternoon by giving up the ball game and rendering a service which was obviously rendered out of a desire to be helpful and not for the sake of a monetary consideration. It was not my duty to give up my Saturday afternoon, but it was my privilege. Furthermore, it was a profitable privilege because it yielded me $1,000 in cash and a much more responsible position than the one I had formerly occupied. It was Carol Downs' duty to be on hand until usual quitting time, but it was his privilege to remain at his post after the other workers had gone, and that privilege properly exercised brought him greater responsibilities and a salary that yields him more in a year than he would have made in a lifetime in the position he occupied before he exercised the privilege. I've been thinking for more than 25 years of this privilege of performing more service and better service than that for which we are paid, and my thoughts have led me to the conclusion that a single hour devoted each day to rendering service for which we are not paid can be made to yield bigger returns than we received from the entire remainder of the day during which we are merely performing our duty. We are still in the neighborhood of the most important part of this lesson. Therefore, think and assimilate as you listen on. The law of increasing returns is no invention of mine, nor do I lay claim to the discovery of the principle of rendering more service and better service than paid for as a means of utilizing this law. I merely appropriated them after many years of careful observation of those forces which enter into the attainment of success, just as you will appropriate them after you understand their significance. You might begin this appropriation process now by trying an experiment which may easily open your eyes and place back of your efforts powers that you did not know you possessed. Let me caution you, however, not to attempt this experiment in the same spirit in which a certain woman experimented with that biblical passage which says something to the effect that if you have faith the size of a grain of mustard, and say to yonder mountain, be removed to some other place, it will be removed. This woman lived near a high mountain that she could see from her front door. Therefore, as she retired that night, she commanded the mountain to remove itself to some other place. Next morning, she jumped out of bed, rushed to the door, and looked out. But lo, the mountain was still there. Then she said,